We've had a very stimulating and challenging morning thinking about Palestine. We're thinking now about what we can do more practically. So I'm very pleased to hand you over to Chris, who is our chair for this afternoon. So please welcome Chris and the whole panel.
I thought I'd arrived in church with a whole string of notices going on and on and on. I'm Chris Rose. I'm director of Amos Trust, which is a small creative human rights organization which works extensively in Israel and Palestine, and also chair of Kairos Britain. Let me introduce the panel to us here. We have Mitri Raheb. It's a great pleasure to have you here, Mitri, from Bethlehem. We've obviously prepared the weather specially to greet you today. Thank you so much for your previous session. I don't know if people were here a few minutes ago to him. Absolutely inspiring. And I'd highly recommend his book, which I'm sure you'll mention as we go along here. Mitri is one of the, I mean that in the nicest ways. He's also, and he'll tell you about his book signings and all of the rest of it later on. Mitri is one of the authors of Kairos Palestine, and is also the priest in charge of minister of the Lutheran Evangelical Church, the Christmas Church in Bethlehem. And so it's a great, great pleasure to have you with us today. Next we have Anne Clayton. Anne is the UK coordinator of Friends of Sabeel. Sabeel is a Liberation Theology Centre in Jerusalem, and she will be reflecting on some of their contribution later on. Next up we have Charlotte Marshall. Charlotte is a new advocacy worker for Kairos Britain, and so she's been in post for about a month. And so any requests for any action after this, you just go to Charlotte, okay? So we'll just point you all towards Charlotte. She's the one who will do the work. And then we have Jeremy Moody. Jeremy is the CEO of Embrace Middle East, who are sponsoring this particular event. Great to have you with us, Jeremy, today. Thank you so much as well. And you'll hear more about Embrace later on. Before we start, it seems only right that we spend a few moments thinking about the situation in Gaza. As all of us have known over the last few weeks, and indeed the last years, we've watched the situation there unfold. What we'd like to do is to read a short poem from a Gazan poet, and then if we have a couple of moments of silence after that. I thought, even though you just sat down, it would be appropriate if we were to stand for this, if that's okay. So if I can ask you to stand for this. This is a poem by Khaled Juma.
So let's just be still. O rascal children of Gaza, you who constantly disturbed me with your screams under my window, you who filled every morning with rush and chaos, you who broke my vase and stole the lonely flower on my balcony, come back and scream as you want and break all the vases, steal all the flowers. Come back. Just come back.
Mitri, I wonder if you could begin for us by saying a little bit about Kairos Palestine and also about the situation in Gaza and some thoughts about that to start us off.
I mean, let me start by saying that I'm 52 years old. Please don't tell it to anyone, but just... and in these 52 years, this war on Gaza is my 10th war that I experience, which really means that if you live in Palestine, every 5 years, in average, we experience another war. And what a war means is it's, I mean, the last war you had here was, at least on British soil, was, I think, Second World War. So most of you maybe were not there yet at that time to remember these days, but it disturbs your whole life. And, you know, you start gathering the pieces once the war is over, just in preparation for the next one that will come. And actually, 10 wars in 50 years, all of them were in connection with the Israeli occupation. The first war I experienced was 1967, that when Israel invaded the West Bank and Gaza. And since then, the occupation continues. And so, I mean, to live constantly under this threat of another war is not helping Israel, nor is it good for Palestine. And I feel that it's high time to end the Israeli occupation so that hopefully the two peoples in that part of the world can live side by side. Now, as long as there is occupation, there will always be resistance. Some of it might be violent resistance or armed resistance. Much of it could be creative resistance. And actually, the Kairos document speaks about creative resistance. And I will say maybe more about that a bit later. But think of Gaza. It's a small area, 360 square kilometers, with almost 2 million people. It's the most crowded area in the world. And if you see how much of that Gaza Strip was bombarded in the last 50 days, it's much more than 9/11. But people don't see it like 9/11. But the Palestinians experience what's happening in Gaza like this is their 9/11. Now, because we are not America, maybe the world is not having the same sympathy like with 9/11, but actually this is what's happening. The Gaza war is our 9/11 experience. And I was talking in the morning about patterns in our history. This is not the first time that our cities were besieged and destroyed. I said in the morning, 587, when the Babylonians besieged Jerusalem, that was another story like this. But also another story like this was Masada. Maybe many of you were to Masada, I'm not sure. When the Roman Empire besieged Jewish fighters in a very small spot, and they besieged them for so many days until they actually decided to take their lives because they didn't want to give up. My hope is that this Gaza war will not be the Palestinian Masada, but that, and that's for me the main thing, that people in Gaza will be able to experience normal life. You know, normal life here is boring because you are looking for some excitement. We in the Middle East, we have so much excitement that we are looking for just normal life. And the last thing in Gaza, Gaza has still a very small Christian population, like 1,300, mainly Orthodox, few Catholics, few Baptists. And it's sad to see. Gaza used to be the mission station for the south of Palestine. The whole southern Palestine was Christianized by people in Gaza. And to see how Christianity is almost becoming non-existent there is really, for me, very, very sad. And yet this very small Christian minority is trying to do their best through education, through health, and to bring some hope into a hopeless situation. So maybe this as just a short introduction.
Can I follow up and pick up on the point about creative resistance? This session is about action. It's about the action which we can take. And I wonder if you could say a little bit more about that challenge which we're seeking to respond to in the UK.
Really, the Kairos document is the first document that introduces the word creative resistance. And in fact, I was pushing for this word to come into the Kairos document, because for me, nonviolent resistance is not enough. It's negating the negative. It's non-violent. Creative puts it in a much more positive way, but it says that we have to think outside the box. And I think the dilemma we are in the Middle East right now is that we didn't learn to think outside the box. There are no in-box solution anymore for the Middle East to fix it. I was asked this morning how to fix the Middle East. To fix it, we need to think outside the box, and creative resistance is one of that. And I guess also here in this part of the world, we need to learn also creative resistance, because I feel that, you know, it was like this. Politicians in this country and in the West were doing their business as usual, mainly supporting the state of Israel. And remember, I mean, the occupation, the Israeli occupation of Palestine, is not possible unless it is subsidized by the empire. Which means if the 7 million Israeli will pay for the occupation from their own pocket, they will end the occupation tomorrow. It's too expensive. But they can afford it because they have rich uncles. And these rich uncles continue to do two things. Politicians continue to subsidize the occupation by weapons. I mean, imagine alone from the U.S., Israel gets a year $3.5 billion in military aid and another billion dollars in other kind of support through NGOs and others. So $7 billion only from the U.S. go to 7 million citizens. Israel gets, an Israeli citizen gets much more from the U.S. than a U.S. citizen from his country. Imagine. But on the other hand, so the empire, the Western countries provide the hardware for Israel to continue its occupation. All of the F-16 that were bombarding Gaza, they were not made in Israel. And Israel did buy them. They got them as gifts. So that's what the empire is giving, actually, Israel, these hardware. But, and so that we will not feel as Christians privileged, the church, or many churches, were providing Israel with the software. What is the software? The software meaning that an average Christian in the pew in the UK on Sunday morning, when they go to church and they hear about Israel in the Bible, and they go back home and switch on BBC, and then it talks about Israel, subconsciously, they connect the Israel of the Bible with the Israel of today, and so sympathize with the occupation. That's the software. So in my book, I'm trying to crack that software. We need to crack that software. And so creative resistance is for me exactly that. We have to crack that. But also, we have, as churches, to learn how also to resist what politicians in our countries are doing. You know, a friend of mine wrote me saying, you know, our government sent Israel money, but we continue to pray for you. I said, thank you. We really need all the prayers. It's the prayers of so many people keep us going. But it's high time to think, what can we do more than praying for you? That's creative resistance. I will leave this question, you know, for you to think about. What more can we do than praying for you without underestimating the power of prayer? But to be creative, we have to think a bit more than that. So,
thank you. And do you want to just pick up on some of that by starting from the Bible and kind of starting from there and some of the work which Seville have been doing? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mitri, for all your ministry to us today and to me as an individual over 6 years when I was in Jerusalem. I don't know how many of you have seen this booklet. Could you put your hands up if you've seen this booklet? Okay, now put your hands up if you haven't. Okay, there's an awful lot of you still need to get this book. this is the UK's response or the British response to the Kairos document that Mitri has been talking about. And in it, there are many sort of little chapters. The chapter that I want to emphasize to you just now, and the others are going to do it the others later, is the theological response and what can we do and what did we do. Colin Chapman, who is one of the authors of the Islam Christian interfaith passage in this book, has done a Bible study for us, and it has been so popular, I have to tell you, that there's not many left, but we will be able to get more. And what he has done is produce one that we think can be used in either Lent or Advent or whenever you like in small groups. He comes up with some interesting ideas of how you can do it, and he covers four topics that are in the Kairos response that we wrote. And Mitri has mentioned many of them today. I think that contextually, understanding the Bible in its own context and in our context today is very important. And that's what these questions do. How should we think we should use the Bible in thinking about Israel-Palestine today? And Mitri has just mentioned that. What's special about the land? It comes up all the time. I don't know if you're asked these questions all the time. It comes up. Mitri's just referred to it again. We need to be clear about what this means. What is our vision for a just society? And how should we fight injustice and work for justice and peace? Now, I have to say, this is a lot cheaper than Mitri's book. This is... this is a pound. But the other thing that I want to suggest, we have it on the stall. If we don't have any left, we'll take names and addresses, and we can get in touch with you about getting it. But I think that this is very helpful. It's very open, and it helps you really begin to think for yourself. What do you think about what the Bible says in its own context? The second thing that I want to draw your attention to is a American, Canadian, and UK Friends of Seville trip to Palestine in December, and as part of that we are going to be going to the Kairos Palestine 4th anniversary conference, which Mitri is helping organize, and I've actually just reminded him, I don't think he knew, but we're going to be meeting with him for lunch, so I've told him he has to be around. So if you're interested in doing this, and it's called here Popular Resistance and Liberation Theology in Palestine. Having heard Mitri, I think we should be calling it Creative Resistance and Contextual Theology in Palestine. And we'll be meeting with the local people in Palestine and in Israel who are actually doing the creative resistance themselves in a non-violent way to encourage us and to spur us on here as to what we should do. So if you would like to come and see about this and have lunch with Mitri, then please get in touch with me. That's a lot more expensive than Mitri's book.
But by the sound of things, Mitri's buying you all lunch. So that's got to be a result. Jeremy, you're involved in a number of creative responses. You've got the Olive Tree campaign at the moment, among other things.
Yes, I'll talk about that in a moment. But can I begin by disagreeing with Mitri on one point? He mentioned churchgoers, Christians in the UK, associating the Israel of the Bible with the Israel that they read about and hear in the news. I think that's almost certainly true in the United States. But we actually did a survey a couple of months ago of Christians in the UK, and the response from that was very, very different. And in fact, only about 12% of churchgoers in the UK made Israel of the Bible and the modern state of Israel to be the same. And I think what was also clear was that twice as many Christians in the UK have a sympathise with the Palestinians as sympathise with the state of Israel in the current conflict. And that was a survey that was done even before the latest assault on Gaza. And we expect that that percentage will increase. So British Christians are very different from Christians in the States, where about 80% of Christians, for example, would believe that God had given the land to the Jewish people as an eternal gift and that therefore it was their divine right to possess it today. That's not a phenomenon we see here in the UK. And in a way, that's what we're trying to access, that interest in the Middle East, a knowledge of what's going on, less of an attachment in this country to Zionist theology, a heart for the underdog, a heart for justice. So how can you use that instinct that we have as Christians in the UK to work creatively for justice in Palestine? Well, I think that Chris will be speaking in a moment about boycott and boycott, divestment and sanctions, and that is very much a centerpiece of the Kairos Palestine and the Kairos Britain campaign. Of course, Mitri was talking about non-violence being a negative of a negative. In many ways, boycott is itself a negative, not buying something from the occupied territories or something produced by the occupation. So what are the positives that you can do? Well, for example, Mitri mentioned the tiny Christian presence in Gaza. And in fact, we counted them also in another survey, and there are 1,313 Christians. He mentioned the Greek Orthodox, the Baptists, the Catholics. He didn't mention the one Anglican lady. She's a lovely lady. She's called Araxi. She's a retired pharmacist. She's on the board of the Middle East Council of Christians. And she's such a committed Anglican. Those of you who are Anglicans will love this. She only receives communion when the Bishop of Jerusalem visits, which is not very often because the Israelis don't give him a permit. So this tiny community is support. They run a hospital, they run clinics, they run schools, they run community centres. Their presence is way in excess, in the community is way in excess of their numbers. This is about the quality of their witness, not the quantity. So maybe one creative way is just to stand in solidarity with these Christians in Gaza and the West Bank and in East Jerusalem, in the occupied territories, as they share their faith, the compassion of Christ with their neighbours. And there are many organisations, Embrace is one, but there are many other organisations that partner with these Christian institutions. That's one creative way of responding to occupation. Another creative way is to engage with people who are opinion formers. It could be MPs, it could be ministers. Actually, for me, the priority is our church leadership. If I was talking about the preference, the sympathy that many Christians have in this country with the Palestinian cause. Is that reflected by the bishops? Is it reflected by church leaderships? I see lots of shaking heads. I think you're answering my own question. So we have our own speculation as to why it is that bishops and other church hierarchies are reluctant to engage in this issue. Some people think it's because of the preference to focus on interfaith dialogue and the worry that somehow they might offend their Jewish colleagues. But should that stand in the way of calling prophetically for justice in Israel and Palestine? So write to your bishops, write to your church leaderships, engage in the issues, write to the local papers, write in your church magazines about what you see. There are many, many creative ways of highlighting, and there really is no excuse now for not knowing what's going on. I mean, this latest Gaza war was probably the most photographed and filmed war in the Middle East. It was on our smartphones, and the smartphones that are projecting these images onto into our living rooms are changing people's perspective of what's going on there. So that's another creative way of responding. A final creative way that I wanted to mention is, and Chris has very kindly let me mention this, is our own Olive Tree project, which Embrace the Middle East is running. Between 800 and 900,000 olive trees have been demolished since Israel occupied East Jerusalem and the West Bank in 1967. They've been knocked down or burnt for Jewish settlements or for the separation barrier or for the building of roads to connect the settlements. The olive tree, as you know, is the staple crop of the West Bank. It's a symbol of Palestinian rootedness in the land, if you like. It's a powerful symbol of Palestinian identity with the land. And yet hundreds of thousands of these trees have been demolished. And you read of families whose livelihoods have been ruined by the demolition of these trees. So there is an initiative run by local Christians, the East Jerusalem YMCA and the YWCA of Palestine, to replant some of these trees. And in fact, they're being replanted on land that is at risk of expansion by the settlements. Some of you may know that under the Oslo Accords, there was Area A, Area B, and Area C. Area C was under Israeli military control with the intention that eventually it should pass back to the Palestinians as part of the two-state solution that Mitri spoke about earlier. What's happened in Area C, which is about 60% of the West Bank, so in fact, Areas A and B, which are left, that's about 8% of Mandate Palestine. So, and the 60% of the West Bank, instead of looking after that and handing it back to the Israelis, of course, Israel has been settling it with settlers. And there are now about between 700,000 and 750,000 settlers in East Jerusalem and the West Bank. Many of those, some of those, have actually arrived in the West Bank and East Jerusalem while the peace talks were going on, the Kerry peace talks that founded earlier this year. As somebody said, negotiating peace with the Israelis is like negotiating on how you divide a pizza while one side is eating the pizza. So if you want to stop these settlements, then build olive trees around them, because they can't seize the land if it's cultivated. They seize the land because it's not cultivated, and it's not cultivated because the Palestinians can't access the land. The olive tree is low maintenance. You just plant it. It doesn't need much water, and it grows. And it's a powerful, creative, non-violent, sorry for using the word Mitri, a poignant symbol of resistance against occupation. And for £15, you can have your own olive tree, and we'll tell you where it is and give you updates on it. And that's one of the projects that we're running with local Christians through Embrace the Middle East. So there are many other creative ways, but that's just a few, the way we can stand up in solidarity with Mitri and all of the other Palestinians and say, this is not going to happen. It's not in our name. We want justice for Israel, for the Palestinians.
Thank you. Taking action requires us to be creative in so many different ways. You may well have been at the thing last night about the wall which was built in St. James Piccadilly, a group of artists working on that. How many of you marched recently in the streets of London or elsewhere and joined in that? I hate writing letters to my bishop, partially because I'm ordained and he normally thinks it's me apologising for something. I'm not someone who writes letters. I often find marching kind of is laborious, but it is so, so important. The messages we get back from people is, thank you, it's good to know that we're not ignored. Doing these things is really important. Creative Action also has to go further, and we are very deeply committed to taking people over to Palestine for a whole variety of things, house rebuilding trips, there's cuisine things coming up, there's a whole gamut of different trips. Come over to G-Source, whatever it's called, the big tent anyway with all the people, and see the different things you can get involved. Going and visiting is so, so important. If you haven't had a chance to yet, please do. I was speaking to someone yesterday who had been over, and he's in the building trade, and he was talking to his father-in-law who was watching Fox News as Gaza started. And as Fox News, as you know, is one of the most right-wing things you could imagine. And they started having a blistering row. And his father-in-law, who is very right-wing, suddenly heard with the whole thing because his son was challenging his views. That person would never listen to someone like me. It was just because someone who he knew had seen it with their own eyes and had experienced it and was telling the story. So please do go and see. But also take action in terms of boycott. I don't know how many of you were at the G4S AGM recently. Any takers at all? Oh, Knife. We had the great pleasure of being at the G4S AGM. Now, G4S, as some of you know, are... what's a good description of G4S? They're one of the more, so G4S are the world's leading security firm. And there's been a long-standing campaign to get them to withdraw from their contracts which they hold with the Israeli prison service and also with some of the checkpoints going inside Israel. And the AGM was an opportunity. It's being run by War and Want. And they've got the stalls over there today and PSC, and we were involved in this. And the AGM was an opportunity for people to go and pose questions to the board. And you went in, and there was the whole board sitting up on the stage there, about 20 of them, with a token woman on one end. Sorry, that came out wrongly. And so they had that. And then on every side, there was these very smartly dressed squaddies and ex-soldiers who spent the whole time staring at you, and if you pulled out your phone, they'd ask you to come and put it away, or your iPad. And then if you interrupted, they'd started dragging you out of the room. And there was 30 soldiers there patrolling the space for an AGM of a major leading corporation. I think it's FTSE 100 Corporation. And this is what it was about. And what happened is, in the meeting, they said how they were withdrawing from their contracts, and that they were stopping it because of the pressure internationally and the calls for boycotts and the calls for withdrawal, and because, frankly, they couldn't stand having AGMs where 25 out of the 32 questions were about what was happening inside Israel. And so it really does work. Now, you may think, I'm not going to do something with G4S. I'm not going to do Veolia. I'm not going to do that. Well, do Sainsbury's then. Most of us are fairly middle class here, so we shop in Sainsbury's. Please look at the PSC and War on One side about how you can be involved in boycotting produce in Sainsbury's, which furthers the occupation produced there. So please, have a look at that. It's really simple. You don't have to boycott the whole of Sainsbury's. You'll be delighted to know, because if your local shop is Asda or Sainsbury's, let's face it. So you don't have to do that, but you can be involved in them changing what they're doing. And the response from within Israel is really strong, because what we hear time and time again is that boycott campaign is the thing which is most threatening the state of Israel and what they're most concerned about. Mitri, would you like to add a little bit more about boycott from within the Palestinian side? Mitri, can you add a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Let me maybe take the other side of boycott. Yeah. We did a study, a group of Palestinian NGOs 2 years ago, about consumption in Palestine. And what we found there is that only 15% of what we consume in Palestine is made in Palestine. 85% of what we consume is imported. And because Israel, as occupation, controls everything in Palestine, all the import, export, you can imagine that the bulk of the 85% which we import are imported from Israel. So we said, what if we were to raise the bar from 15% to 25%? 25% of what we consume will be made in Palestine. Guess what? We found out that if we achieve that, only the 10% raise, we can create 100,000 new job opportunities. This is in a context where the unemployment rate is between 22 to 40%. 22 in the West Bank, over 40% in Gaza. And so for me, boycott is all about that we as Christians, we as responsible citizens, we as civil society, we have always to make choices. It's really about choice. Should I buy this? Or is this harming someone? I remember, you know, when I was in Germany studying, at that time, there was in Germany, you know, the call not to buy deodorant with gas. And, you know, the moment I learned that this is harming the environment, that was the last time I bought it. That was now 27, 28 years ago. This is exactly what boycott is all about. It's really, we have as responsible to citizens to make a choice, knowing that by our choice, either we can sustain life or increase harm done to others. And so that's always for me what boycott is all about. And I hope the day will come when you can also help even buy, so just not the boycott, but even one step further, how can we encourage even Palestinian import? So that would be the next step.
Okay, we'll come on to Zaytoun in a few minutes. Yeah. And so please do see Zaytoun are here and they indeed are recommending those goods. Can I pass on and say actually this is also a creative process of community. And Charlotte, I wonder if you could say a little bit about Kara's communities.
Yeah, certainly. First of all, just to sort of set this in context, it was really reassuring to see at least half of the hands in here go up and say that they'd read Time for Action. And I know that this was launched last year at Greenbelt. Can I just put out a plea that if you've read Time for Action and you've endorsed it, that's not the end for you. The idea of this is that it's a living document. It's a document which hopefully has inspired you to do something and to continue to do something. And we've talked about four of those things today already. We've talked about going and seeing, we've talked about praying, about theology, and about actions you can take like boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And I want to talk now very briefly about something which is only mentioned shortly in here, but that I'm now really seeking to work on in the next year, to build up, and to bring as part of what Kairos Britain is all about. And that is called a Kairos community. Now, hands up if you've ever felt really fed up of campaigning on Israel and Palestine. Come on, be honest. We've all been there. You know, it's a really hard situation, isn't it? Because quite often we take actions. We take actions about Gaza and 5 years later we're at war again. We take actions to boycott. Companies ignore us. And it can be a real hard slog, but it's actually reassuring to see that none of your hands went up because it means you're still keen to keep going. And the idea of Kairos Communities is to encourage you to do just that. It's to get you actually committed with a group of people, a support network, in a place where you can do creative campaigning in a way that suits you, is relevant to your community, to your church, is about where you live and about how you personally feel you can take action. And the other part of it is that we don't want you to do that all on your own in your own community. We want you to do that and link up with your neighbours or with someone in Scotland that needs your advice or help or with someone that's run an event in somewhere else in the country. And the idea of Kairos Communities is to link all those communities together so that we support each other. There is this leaflet, and I have two incredibly helpful members of Kairos Britain, Anne over here and Karen, who's going to wave at me. in the middle there. And they will pass those around to you, or you can go and see them and pick them up. And inside here, it's just a really brief description of what we see as Kairos communities, how you can sign up, how you can get involved, and how, especially from my point of view, I can support you to do that. So please do pick one of these up and get in touch. And if you are feeling a bit jaded, maybe this is the sort of reinvigoration you might need to get back on that campaigning, get back on that prayer, get back on talking to your church, getting other people involved, and really trying to build a movement within your own area. So please do pick one up. The other thing I just want to mention is that there are lots of these available in GSource at various different stands, from Amos Trust, from Embrace, Pax Christi. Please pick it up. If you have already read it and you haven't endorsed it, please do go on our website and do so. It will link you into Kairos Britain. It will mean that you get emailed by me and perhaps others with things that we can help you with, events that are running. We can signpost you to different organisations. And it's a way, really, it's not just about endorsing this document. It's about endorsing it and getting and keeping involved. So please do pick it up and please do endorse it. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to open up the floor at this point. We've got about sort of 15, 20 minutes, something like that. So really for questions, comments from the floor. I think we've got a microphone going around. Let's take a few at the same time. And let's start over here. We've got sort of four here. If it could all be very quick, that would be fantastic, please. And we'll grab a few.
Thank you. Just to say that it's a year since we launched Kairos Britain. And some of us felt at that point that we'd come to the end of the road, that we were exhausted, but we were delighted. It was a great launch. And we realized we were only at the beginning. And delighted that Charlotte Marshall is the new part-time advocacy worker for Kairos Britain. And some of us are thrilled that Charlotte is with us. And it means that I can start watching a bit more cricket. but one thing I just wanted to mention quickly is that apart from Kairos Communities, a new initiative that we actually took last year is Kairos Training Days. And some of you went to the Birmingham launch June the 21st. We have three more Kairos Training Days, one in the southwest, one in the northeast, and one in the Northwest, sorry, that's the first one in September. If you want to know more about those, or if you want to organize a training day for your area, then please do get in touch with Charlotte and we'll see what we can do. And the great emphasis of these is on the practical stuff that we've been talking about. How can we engage with boycott, divestment and sanctions and the various other actions that we need to take? So thank you very much, and delighted that Charlotte is with us, and Give her a great hand. You know.
Thank you. I just want to mention, to add to some of the things that you've already mentioned. You mentioned interfaith dialogue and in people's wariness about criticising Israel because of upsetting people. But we have to remember that what we're talking about are violations of international law and the denial of human rights. And we have to speak truth. So be aware that in doing this, we may upset people, well, we do all the time, don't we? But we have to be honest. The other thing is about the arms trade. We have to stop the arms trade, and there's a lot of petitions and things going around at the moment. Campaign Against the Arms Trade has a new document coming out and a briefing leaflet. It's really useful if you want to use that to do it, and you know, work to do that with your politicians. And the other thing that we discovered locally, G4S has been mentioned, but we discovered that our local authority, as part of the West Midlands Consortium, were investing our pension money in at least five firms that were involved in the occupation of Palestine and loads more that are involved in the arms trade. And I come from Coventry, the City of Peace and Reconciliation, so we thought this was a bit dubious, really. So we've been campaigning for 18 months to get our authority and the other West Midlands authority to divest from those firms. It is a hard slog. But can I invite you to join us? If you're in the West Midlands, please do. If you're in other authorities, I can probably guarantee that your authorities will be also investing in very, very dubious companies.
Thank you.
On the creative resistance, I suggest we can make a very positive start today and come and visit our Palestinian store, which is here. We'll be here till fairly late this evening. If you know where the tiny tea tent is, just go to the right past the tiny tea tent and visit the Palestinian crafts, and we've got plenty of olive oil and other Zaytoun products for you to buy. On the boycott, which I'm very positive, I'm very positive and I feel we need to up the ante on boycotting. I find a lot of people are quite reluctant and uncomfortable with this. And I mean, I tell them we're not boycotting Jewish goods, it's Israeli. We're trying to put pressure on the Israeli authorities, Israeli government. But I wondered if the panel have got any other comments I could make to help people be more positive about this non-violent resistance boycotting.
Okay, we'll come to that in a minute, and we'll hold on. Other questions, comments? Let's have a couple more here, and then we can...
Hello, thank you for this great panel discussion. I represent the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. A couple of comments are that what's happening with the displacement of the Palestinian people is horrific, it's urgent. Just since the 8th of July... there's been more than 10,000 homes demolished in Palestine, and more than 450,000 Palestinians have lost their home. Israel is seeking to clear areas of Palestinians, and especially in Area C. So it is important we act and act fast. Israel is also trying to change international law so that it is not held accountable for the war crimes that are being committed. So again, keep informed and write to your MPs. And two last things. We have got somebody named Ofer Naiman coming to the UK to do a speaking tour this autumn. He is an Israeli member of the ICAD, Committee Against House Demolitions, who was a founder member of Boycott from Within. So from an Israeli perspective, he's saying, please help us internationally. The Israeli Jews have lost their way. So this is a way we can be a practical help. When you go to Palestine, also go and meet Israelis, get their perspective as well. It helps you when you come back and talk to people who you've met. Certainly with ICAD and Experience Travel Tours, we give you the opportunity to meet people on both sides of the divide and provide analysis on the requirements for just and sustainable peace for both people groups. Thank you.
And the last one from this session, then we'll move around the room. Just this one more here, then we'll do this session, then we'll go to other areas around the room.
I just wanted to say that we, in our parish in Crowthorne in Berkshire, we have now a Kairos community, which was voted for unanimously by the PCC. But it didn't happen all at once. There was a process. Chris came and preached. Sue came to talk to us. We had a prayer, a day of prayer, and eventually educated the parish into what was really going on. So it is possible.
Thank you. Let's just pick
Can
up
I
on...
Can I just say, yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for saying that, because actually that was one of the key things I wanted to get across, is that it doesn't have to always happen in the same way. So we don't have a formula for you to become a Kairos community. What we want is a group of people who are inspired and who want to inspire and inform others to be willing to take action to do that. And my role really is to support you in the way that you've had that from Chris. And that's a perfect example of how it can work, and we can then link you up to other communities. So please have a think about that and how you could do something similar in your own community.
Jeremy, do you want to pick up on the point about boycotts?
I think the point that was made about people being nervous about boycotts and what are the arguments that you can use, I think that's a very powerful point. And when we did our survey of about 2,500 Christians, over half of them said they would not be bothered if they knew that dates came from a settlement date farm. And I found that astonishing. And that's Christians. And these are people who are quite happy to be involved in fair trade and other active campaigns in their churches. And I think the reason is that people, those who oppose boycott, have defined the terms of debate. And they have said boycott is anti-Semitic. And I think we need to marshal the arguments as to saying why it's not anti-Semitic, it's not against the Jewish people, it's against the actions which are illegal under international law of a state. We did the same with South Africa. Again, there's problems. Immediately you get accused of being anti-Semitic if you draw the parallel between South African apartheid and what's happening in Palestine today. But we need to have courage and do it. And very often I find that I neutralize arguments against BDS by quoting a friend who will be known to Mitri, who is Jamal Khader Daibis, who is the rector of the Latin seminary in Bethlehem and one of the authors of Kairos. And he said, as Christians, we oppose violence. We also want to end this occupation. BDS is a non-violent way to challenge occupation. If you would not allow us to do BDS, what else would you permit me to do? And I don't have an answer. When he asked me that question, as I sat in his study in the Latin seminary, I didn't have an answer. And I think it's a powerful point. And so I think we need to have courage. But that 50% who would be not have a problem with buying settlement dates, you know, we need to work on that. And that's really the creative resistance, to encourage awareness that actually by buying dates that come from settlements, and I think it's actually about 80% of dates in the supermarkets come from settlements. They're marked as produce of Israel but packed in the West Bank. That's because the company that makes them is an Israeli company. But they are coming from the West Bank settlements. So I think it's an education point, but it's a very, very good point, and we need to work together to say this is not anti-Semitic.
Thank you. Let's have some more questions sort of swathed down the middle on this side. Yeah.
Thank you very much to the panel. I'm, for my sins, I'm on the General Synod of the Church of England. And I was going to pick up on Jeremy's point about church members and church leaders. I mean, that you described it very strongly. Church members tend to be supporting the human rights of the Palestinians. But unfortunately, the church leaders currently, particularly in the Anglican Church, are a bit worried about the Jewish side of things. And just very briefly, just two points to illustrate this. I drafted a very mild private members' resolution supporting the ecumenical accompaniers, which I was amazed that when it eventually reached the agenda of the Church of England, there was a great outcry from the chief rabbi, from the board of deputies of British Jews, etc. And people's emails were absolutely jammed on General Synod. Much to my relief, not due to my oratorical skills, which are non-existent, we managed to get it passed. But since then, we've had a new archbishop. And in an interview at the time he was being enthroned, he was asked by a Jewish newspaper about the resolution. And he had abstained at the resolution. In other words, he hadn't actually voted in favor or against. And he said he regretted that he hadn't voted against the resolution supporting ecumenical accompaniers. Now, anyway, that's an example of a church leader who's, in my view, in that issue, isn't leading us in the right way. I can sort of tell you more detail about that later, if you want. And the other thing was that as a result of my vote, I'm not sure the Church of England has done a great deal, but it probably has sort of gone along with the ecumenical accompaniers thing. But the pro-Israeli lobby has been so exercised. Not only did they get upset before we passed the resolution, they've been sending emails to congratulate people who voted against my resolution. They've also been lobbying people. Relatively new Bishop of Manchester, David Walker, not the cartoonist, the other David Walker, when he went to Manchester, he was lobbied by the local Jewish community because he was known to have voted in favor of ecumenical accompaniers. So they're actually taking, so it's important to lobby your church leaders, is really the point I'd make there, as well as doing all the other things you've suggested.
Thank you. Can we have a couple more working backwards, if that's okay, please, through the middle up here. In the blue, and then over in the light blue afterwards, thank you.
Hi, I'm Simon Braybrook, I'm a GP in Cardiff. I got a question, especially about working with our friends and allies in the Muslim community in Cardiff. We've got a very big Muslim community, and I'm very proud that Wales is really getting behind the Palestinian cause. I am a GP in an area with a big Somali community, a big Asian community, and we went on a very large march in Cardiff. And I struggle sometimes with the fact that I want to engage and work together with the Christian and Muslim supporters in our Cardiff, in our area, but there's the problem of interacting with people who do see violence as a solution, and especially marching with my children and wanting to protect them from some of the more hateful chants that were arising, as well as the physical violence that occurred on that march. And sadly, two of my medical students that I teach in the medical school were amongst those who went off to Syria to fight recently. And I'm sure Mitri must, you know, in Palestine, be working, trying to unify communities that are trying to work to the same thing by violent methods and non-violent methods. So how can we... how can we engage? How can we work with communities who see violence as the solution?
Thank you very much. Let's have this lady in the light blue here, and then Mitri, I'll ask you to respond to that.
I just had a question. Where I live and work in Manchester, there is a very large Jewish community, a significant proportion of which see being Jewish and being Israeli as synonymous. I am using the microphone. and although we know that that's not true, we know that being anti-Israeli government and being anti-Semitic are two different things. When you're trying to interact with this community, you hit a wall. Israeli and Jewish are the same thing. And certainly in the centre of Manchester recently, there have been a lot of sort of polarising demonstrations. My best friend from medical school no longer speaks to me because he finds my views offensive as a Jew. How do we creatively engage with that community so that I don't end up losing any more friends, and that we actually move forward with that?
Thank you very much. Before we answer, how are we doing time-wise? Okay, so Mitri, could you possibly respond to those, and any final comments, Mitri, as well? Thank you.
The question about violence, it's really interesting because how do we frame things? In my book, Faith in the Face of Empire, I have a chapter about state terror, which means we don't see the terror that the state is doing as being violence or terror. I mean, even here in the UK, I was following, you know, what was said by politicians in this country. They were all saying Israel is defending itself. No one said violently. So it's always the empire frames who is violent. If you are with the empire, it's okay to do violence. But if you are not with the empire, then becoming violent becomes a problem. So ISIS was not a problem a few years ago because it was with the empire. Now it's not with the empire. Now everyone talks about it. I mean, it's a bit funny. And so we need really to speak about the state terror more and more. I think from your side. From our side, I always say, And for me, that is what I said in the morning. Jesus was really not happy with the zealots' approach because you cannot combat the empire with its own weapons. It just doesn't make sense. And actually, to dismantle the empire, you have to show that the empire is actually violating the human rights. So exposing the empire, I think, is much, much more important than trying to combat the empire with violence. That is, but don't forget about state terror. And I will combine this with what we heard here about the church leadership, because often what we really don't see is that, and I written about that also in my book, you know, church leadership and politicians, the same. I compared them with the Sadducees in the morning. But it's interesting, I have in the book a short passage about the temptation of Christ. You remember the temptation? So the devils take Jesus to a high place, a place of authority, and tells him, you know, I will give you all of this. I will give you power. I can support you to be elected or re-elected. I can give you funds to be elected or re-elected. I can open doors for you you never dreamed of, with one condition: you bow down and worship me. This is exactly the tactic of the Israel lobby, not only in this country. And so I think to expose this temptation that politicians and church leaders are all the time facing is important, because these are really temptations, and most of our leaders, they fall into this trap because they want to have glory. And, you know, standing up for human rights not always give you glory. Sometimes it gives you headache, and it might lead to the cross. And I tell you, not everyone is willingly ready to carry the cross and to march that road. So just some food for thought. So,
thank you. We do have to finish now. I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of the panel, particularly to Mitri. I couldn't recommend his book enough, to be honest. I think it's the best theology I've read for maybe 5 years. The second half of it particularly, I think, really does push the window. It is hugely worth reading. He's signing it at 4:30, I think it is, this afternoon. We'd like to finish just by asking you to join in the prayer. The World Week of Prayer of Peace in Palestine and Israel is on the 21st to 27th of September. You've been given these, you've came out. Charlotte, if you could lead us in this prayer, and then if you'd like to all join in the bits of orange at the bottom of this, that would be great. If you can't see one, there are loads in the audience, just find one which you can do.
God of compassion, we pray for those suffering imprisonment in Palestine and Israel, for children in a place where they are afraid, abused, and harmed for life, for those in long solitary confinement, those held hostage for exchange, for prisoners' families cut off from contact with those they love, for young men and women enforcing a system who are also prisoners of ideology and fear. And we pray that love will prevail over fear, and that the prisoners will become free. God of justice and compassion, while history and high walls, prejudice and fear, barbed wire and locked doors, divide those who live in the land that we call holy, we pray that we may not divide them in our hearts, for we are all your children. The time is near when the prisoners will become free. We pray in hope. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much for coming today, and please do continue to be involved in action. Come and visit people over in GSource, and please do continue talking and becoming Kairos communities. Thank you.